ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
What's happening on the big screen and the small? What to watch?
Joining us for a look this week at films and TV is critic at large, Wen Lee Ma. Wen Lee, good evening. Welcome back.
Hello.
Well, there's a TV series on Amazon Prime called Fallout, a movie about Amy Winehouse. Well, wow. And Late Night with the Devil. Let's start with Fallout, this TV series. What's all this about?
So Fallout is a long-running video game franchise that's been going for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. I'm not a gamer, so I knew peripherally that it's a thing that exists, and I knew there was a TV show coming up. And of course, there's a lot of skepticism around that because for the most part, video game to screen adaptations have failed abysmally. A lot of times at the box office, but most definitely, you know, creatively. But then we had, like, The Last of Us last year, which was the zombie...
Well, the Mario Brothers never did anything.
Oh, they did. What, were they successful, though? I mean, money-wise, sure, yeah, but yeah. Terrible films. Oh. Terrible movies. I actually think that there's Detective Pikachu, which was not bad, and the Sonic the Hedgehog movies, like, they hit the demos. But, man, that Mario movie actually came out last year and made over $1 billion, which just makes me weep with despair. but this is very, very not Mario-like. It's very much an adult video game. It's very much an adult video.
I've never played Fallout. What is it, a first-person shooter game or what?
I think it's like an open-world post-apocalyptic game where you play, you know, different people who go around in this nuclear wasteland. Luckily, the series has more of a narrative. Mm-hmm. So it is set in like an alternate version of our reality, I guess, where nuclear warfare does happen and most of Earth is wiped out, except for these vaults, these underground bunkers that are built. And it happens in kind of like a, I guess what they call retro futuristics, sort of 1950s aesthetic, but technology is more advanced than it was in the 1950s. But everything is, you know, the TV sets around and the costumes are what they are. The music is, you know, stuck in the era of Dinah Washington. And so you've got these three primary strands in Fallout. You've got a woman who, this is set 200 years after the apocalypse itself. You've got a woman who grew up in a vault. She grew up in Vault 33, and all she knows is life in the vault. So she's, you know, very Pollyanna, very happy-go-lucky. Everything is, you know, great. And then her father is kidnapped and he was the overseer of Vault 33. Her father is kidnapped and taken to the surface. And so she braves her way up to the surface and actually expected to really not find anything there. But they, you know, do have raiders from the surface. Is it like a thing that exists? But the whole idea was that you were going to stay underground for hundreds of years in these vaults. And then like a few more generations down, the earth was going to be okay enough to repopulate. So she gets up there and realizes there are actually all these communities that exist. And it's like, whoa, this has been here the whole time. But it is, of course, an incredibly harsh, brutal landscape that has none of the rules that she's been living by. And so she's talking to people about, we live by the golden rule, which is essentially do unto others what you would, you know, unto yourself. And all of a sudden she's in this world where there are no rules. It's just survival. And then you've got these two other strands, which is following a guy who's in this like very technologically haughty, militaristic brotherhood. And then there is he's not a zombie, he's a mutant, but this character exists from before the bombs were dropped, but obviously things have happened to him and he's still living after 200 years, and all three of their paths converge because they're all trying to find this artifact. So, which is a bit of a MacGuffin, but this is a very kind of expansive, you know, world building sort of sci-fi, landscape, and it's created for the screen by Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy, who did the Westworld TV series. So there's a lot of parallels to that in that you've got these complicated mysteries, you've got all these different subsets of characters who are all kind of gunning for the same thing, and a lot of things have been held back from the audience as well.
Okay. It's called Fallout. It's on Amazon Prime. Here's a bit from it.
Now, I acknowledge that I'm unfamiliar with your circumstances, but at first glance your treatment of this man appears unfair and I'm obliged to intervene. Now, if your instinct is to harm me, As a person simply trying to de-escalate a conflict, then I'll have to assume of the two of you, you are likely the primary aggressor. In which case, I think everyone in this town would agree the force is justified. Unless you willingly stand down now.
Oh, well, that's one way to talk someone down.
That's one way to try and talk someone down in a dystopian universe. So that's the voice of Ella Purnell, who plays Lucy, the main character, and she's talking to Walter Goggins, who's, of course, in a lot of different things. It is much better than I expected. And I actually talked to my brother, who has played the game, and he thought it was a pretty good adaptation.
Okay. Stars for Fallout?
3.5.
3.5. Okay. It's on Amazon Prime. You'll need that if you want to watch it. 8 episodes. Right, now, Amy Winehouse is one of my favourite artists. I'm not alone in that. There was a wonderful documentary a few years back called Amy, which, well, I thought was marvellous. But now there's another movie, Back to Black.
Yeah, this is a narrative biopic, so it's a dramatization. Someone plays Amy. Her name is Marissa Abella. She's a rising UK actor. Mm-hmm. I think the best thing she's known for is this 2-season HBO series called Industry. So she played a young financier going into that world. And I think the purpose of casting someone relatively unknown is that then you try and do see Amy Winehouse and you don't see, say, Reese Witherspoon, but obviously not Reese Witherspoon.
No, I get your point. I mean, yeah. I think you almost have to do that.
I think you do because Amy Winehouse's legacy and her kind of spirit is so much stronger than an up-and-coming actor. But I actually think she's very good in this. And she does all her own singing in the movie as well.
Oh, really? Oh, really?
Yeah, and it's a pretty good approximation. Of course, you can't ever really, you know, be the real Amy Winehouse, but it's a pretty good approximation. Like, she's got quite a lot of depth in her voice, very soulful. I mean, that is obviously more than Rami Malek did for Bohemian Rhapsody, which, you know, no offense to Rami Malek, but I mean, that movie is terrible. But anyway,
it is terrible.
It is terrible. It's very popular, made almost as much money as the Super Mario Brothers movie. But I do think the movie is not as good as the performance because it does take, you know, the last, I would say, decade of Amy Winehouse's life. It starts roughly when she's about 18. She's, you know, gigging around the place, and then she signs her record contract and she meets her husband, who of course was one of the great, and by great I mean awful, influences in her life.
She hardly had any good influences. That's the trouble.
She did.
Everyone wanted to use her. Everyone wanted to use her. No one wanted to look after her. She clearly had problems and needed to be looked after, and no one did it. Everyone just wanted a piece of it.
Yeah, and I think this movie kind of reduces her to a lovesick puppy a lot of the times because it makes its primary focus that relationship between her and the husband. And, it is upfront about the drug use, about the bulimia, about all the stuff, but it doesn't really go into, like, why was she depressed? It doesn't really go into her childhood. And it was made with the cooperation of the Amy Winehouse Foundation, which her father now runs. And, of course, her father does come off as a bit of a villain in the 2015 doco.
Yeah.
And
he wasn't a good influence.
He wasn't a good influence, but here he's treated much more sympathetically. So are most people in her life, and her as well, which I think is probably fair. And you just don't get any depth or sense of why things were the way they were for her. So it just ended up, you just come out with all these questions afterwards and you're like, but why was she depressed? Like, what was her relationship with her dad like before she became famous? You know, why didn't he actually get her any help? So it is very surface level. I do, again, think Marissa Abella is very good in it, but I just don't think the movie does very much. I think it lacks that honesty that the 2015 doco had. And if you're absolutely, truly a fan of Amy Winehouse, I think you would look at this film and just go, well, this is about 6% of her life.
Okay, here's a bit from it.
I want people to hear my voice. No, no, no. And just forget their troubles for 5 minutes. Go, go, go. Do you know what girl power means to me? Sarah Vaughan, Lauryn Hill. You need to know this. I ain't no Spice Girl.
From primary school. No. To sell out concerts.
It's gonna happen one of these days. Voice like yours,
got to.
Oh, it's one of the best I've ever heard.
That's my daughter. That's my Amy.
I met someone tonight.
Stay lucky, Amy.
Got an eye for the bad boys.
Ta-da!
the album's number one around the world. The highest charting album from a British female artist in the US ever.
She was an absolute one of the generation singer.
Yeah, she was an incredible talent, which I don't think this film quite captures, and didn't capture, you know, her impact on the world either. Like, it just seemed like it was quite disconnected from the wider conversation of why people loved Amy Winehouse.
Stars?
2.5.
Okay. That'll disappoint a lot of fans, won't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Late Night with the Devil, this is, the movie Amy Winehouse, by the way, is in the cinemas at the moment, may get to tell you eventually, I suppose, I don't know. Late Night with the Devil, what's this?
It is an Australian horror movie.
Cinema release?
Cinema release. Yeah. I think Australian horror filmmakers are having quite a moment, actually, after Talk to Me last year, and now Late Night with the Devil. It was, you know, made on a fairly small budget, and it actually did a lot of the film festival circuit last year. And so over a year ago, Stephen King gave his thumbs up on social media, said that he thought it was absolutely brilliant, which I think anyone working in the horror storytelling space would be like, oh my God, Stephen King noticed us. And it was released in the US a few weeks before it finally came to Australia. And in the US, so the production company alleges, on the third day of release, on a Sunday, it made $666,066.
Oh, it did not. It did not.
I don't know what creative accounting they used to massage those numbers, but that is the release they put out, which I think, you know, is quite a cheeky little story that...
I suppose it's a good piece of fun.
Yeah. It is a good piece of fun. I guess it's harmless in the, the grand scale of things. It is set in the 1970s. It is about a late night talk show host. I mean, the story is set in America, even though it's an Australian film. His name is Jack Delroy, and he was a former radio personality who made it big quite quickly on television, but he was always still just number two. So he was always behind Johnny Carson. He was nominated for awards but didn't win anything. And then a few years in, his wife, who was not a smoker, dies of lung cancer, and things start to deteriorate, and his ratings, you know, start to plummet. And this is all kind of like voiceover in the first 3 or 4 minutes, because the movie itself is set on one night, on Halloween night, October 31, where they're running a special episode where all their guests that have been invited on are occultists. So the first guest is someone who claims to be a psychic medium that can talk to the dead. There's another guest who is a former kind of like swindler of, fanciful tricks, who is dead set out to debunk everyone. But the primary guest is this young girl who is the sole survivor of a doomsday cult, and her therapist, and she can apparently channel a demon. And so you invite a lot of trouble into your studio when you have these guests on Halloween night for a ratings grab. And I don't want to give too much away, although I suppose it's pretty obvious, lots of things go awry.
Yes, I can imagine. All right, it's in the cinemas, Late Night with the Devil. This is something from it.
Now, Lily, I understand that you have a name for this thing that lives inside of you.
I call him Mr. Wriggles.
And why do you call him that?
He kind of wriggles his way inside my head, and then he wriggles his way out.
But with June's help, you are able to control him.
June says that everyone has a demon inside them, but we can't always control them, can we?
Thus,
I will say it is more like Twilight Zone than Pet Sematary. Mm-hmm. So as someone who is not great with horror, I actually found it very palatable. I mean, spooky, definitely, but not so terrifying that I had nightmares for days.
Okay. Stars?
4 stars.
4 stars for Late Night with the Devil. All right, Wen Lee, always great. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.